firemen and do some crisis counseling with them. And so he wanted me to thank you for your prayers this week. I hope if he came to your mind, you remembered him in prayer. And he said he's been doing some critical debriefing workshops with the firemen and possibly some more counseling this week. Some of his regular clients, a lot of them weren't back in Fort Mac yet. They're scattered all over in Newfoundland and Ontario, so he's not exactly sure what the next few weeks are going to look like. But Reverend Simon couldn't come, so he sent Reverend Ruth instead. So here I am, and I am glad to be here. Thanks. Thank you also to Sean and Sydney for their administrative help, and Pat, who helps in the office, and thank you, Raquel, for leading the service so well. A fire in the right place at the right time can do and can be of invaluable assistance. It can create warmth, and it can be very helpful. But this same fire, i.e. Fort McMurray, can do a lot of damage, irreparable damage, when it's burning out of control. And the subject I'm going to address today is something like that fire. Put another way, this knife, in the hands of a chef, it can use and create and cut beautiful cantaloupe and watermelon and be very creative. But this same knife in the hands of someone who has other motives can be very hurtful. Did you hear on the news today that there was 50 in Orlando that were gunned down in a nightclub there? And so this knife can be used in a positive way, or it can be used in a very destructive way. And it is my bet that everyone in this room will be able to relate to the topic that I am going to talk about, because you've experienced it. It's touched everybody, either through our family, employer, parents, friends, and it's a topic that's rarely talked about. In fact, I've been going to church all my life, and I've never heard a pastor talk about it. So you're saying, what is it you're going to talk about this morning? Well, the topic is practical criticism, giving it and taking it. Now, was I right? I said that I was guessing that everyone in this room would have experienced criticism from time to time. Put your hand up. Was I right? Yes, 100%. Well, great. So have I. And you know what? You're in great company. Now, it's no surprise to me that I get criticism from time to time, because I know I do and say things that aren't quite right and need to be tweaked and I need help. But do you know who also received criticism? And a lot of it, to tell you the truth. And that was the perfect person. Jesus always said the right thing, was always in the right place at the right time. Did he receive criticism? You bet. Who did he receive criticism from? That's right, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, his disciples, even the ones closest on his committee, often criticized his judgment and asked him to do something different. And even those closest to him, his family, his own brothers and sisters, criticized him. So if Jesus, the perfect one, received criticism, and a lot of it, it should be no surprise that us imperfect people from time to time will get criticism. How many would say amen to that one? So what is criticism? Well, basically it is a judgment. A judge is one who observes evidence, evaluates, draws conclusions, and expresses them. Now, there's two types of criticism. You're familiar with them. There's positive criticism and negative. Now, positive criticism, of course, it identifies strengths, accomplishments, things that you've done well. And we need that kind of criticism regularly, correct? Yes. Romans 14:19 says, "So let us then pursue the things that make for peace and the building of one another up." We all need encouragement. Also, just before I talk further, please get out your bulletin. There's a pink sheet. You may want to take some notes as I proceed through the seminar. Then the second kind of criticism is negative criticism. It obviously evaluates weaknesses, unsatisfactory behavior, mistakes. And there are two types of negative criticism. There can be constructive, stuff that's very helpful, and that helps us improve our flaws, our blind spots, and areas that we need to improve. But there also can be destructive negative criticism, which there's actually two types of that kind of criticism. One the Bible talks about, which is gossip. And that's when we negatively criticize people, but we don't do it to their face. What do we do? We go behind their backs and we chit-chat and say all kinds of negative things that may or may not be true. And the Bible is very clear that this kind of chatter is not acceptable. 1 Timothy 5:13 denounces gossipers and busybodies, people who are saying things they ought not to. And even in the Psalms, when it says seven things that the Lord hates, what is one of the things that's listed there? Someone who sows discord amongst the brethren, overactive tongues. And then there's the other kind of negative criticism, and that's not when you go to the person's face. I mean, that's not when you go behind their back. It's when you go to their face and you, in a loveless manner, talk to them about things that need to be improved. Proverbs 12:18 says, "There is one who speaks like the thrust of a sword." Have you ever had somebody talk to you and after they left, you felt like you had been pierced, their words had been pierced like a sword? I would have rather them just taken their fists and beat me up than what their words did to me. So we want to avoid that kind of negative criticism, the gossiping and the slashing. So what I'm going to give you this morning is 10 rules for giving constructive criticism. And the first one is pray. Pray something like, "Lord, control my expression of negative criticism. Help me to say constructive things. Discuss what you're going to say to that person with the Lord before you open your mouth." And sometimes when you ask the Lord, "Should I be sharing this?" the Lord will ask you to just keep those comments to yourself. Psalm 19:14 says, "May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be acceptable and pleasing to you, O Lord." And Proverbs 18:21 says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." So this sermon this morning can be applied in various contexts. If you're a parent, how you give criticism to your children. If you're a boss, if you're a co-worker, if you're a leader in the church, you've got a new pastor coming in. Maybe these will be some new tips of how you can deal with criticism as he comes in. Because I hate to tell you, but he's not going to be perfect. Maybe close, but there are going to be flaws as well. And so maybe these tips this morning will help you in dealing with that as well. So we want to use our tongues wisely and pray before we open our mouths. Rule 2, go directly and privately. Matthew 18:15 says, "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him their fault between you and them alone." It doesn't say pick up the phone and call the prayer chain and say, "Oh, we got to pray for so-and-so. I heard that something's going on and we better pray." Well, we do need to pray, but sometimes we have to make sure we got the facts first. We need to go privately and directly to the person if there's an issue. And again, this holds true whether you are a parent, whether you're a co-worker, a boss, a leader, a student. We need to go privately and directly. Who likes to be criticized in public? I don't. There are times when, yes, people need to speak into my life, but nobody likes to hear that in front of a crowd. I was in a shopping mall not too long ago, and I saw this mother who was just wailing on this child and shouting so loud that everybody in the mall could hear her rebuke. Now, maybe the child did need to have correction, but she didn't have to do it like that. Parents, ask yourself, when I correct my child, do I treat them with respect? When our kids were little and I needed to share something with them, I would go like this, "Come here." And they knew that meant, "Come into the next room because I have something very special I would like to talk to you about." And they used to go, "Oh, we're getting the finger." Yes, it's true, but I didn't want to embarrass them in front of their friends, whether they were 2 years old or 22 years old. to give them the criticism privately and directly. And of course, it takes courage to do this. It's much easier to go behind someone's back, isn't it? But to actually take the issue to the person face to face takes courage and integrity, but that's the kind of Christians that God calls us to be. Prepare the setting. You don't want to catch somebody when they're just on their way out to work, or your husband is very busy in the middle of a huge project and you're going to say, sit down, I need to talk, and criticize you. Even in the church, I can remember when we were pastoring, sometimes just as Simon was ready to go onto the platform, somebody would nail him in the foyer and say, Pastor, I need to talk to you about this. And it was sometimes very important things and things that needed to be said. Simon was certainly open to criticism, but their timing was way off. Sometimes it took him off his concentration or his focus as he entered into the pastor or into the pulpit because they had lambasted him with some issue. We had some congregation members that loved to call us right at supper time. Every supper, you could almost set the clock, they were going to be calling. And so once answering machines came in, we would wait until we had finished our meal. But ask yourself, Lord, I need to go to this person. It's important. But is my timing correct? Is this the best time to be sharing it with them? Number three, or two and three go together, go directly and privately. And now rule four. Lead with positive questions. Sometimes when you see someone that's doing something that needs improvement, you're only seeing part of the picture. You don't know why they're doing what they're doing. And so sometimes if, let's say, a person was arriving late all the time to work or to church or whatever, and this bothers you, and so you're going to go privately and directly to them and you're going to say, I'm sick of you being late and you need to straighten up. Well, maybe you'd be surprised to hear that there is a good reason why they're late. And if you lead with a positive question, say, you know, I've been noticing you've been coming late regularly. Is there anything that is contributing to that? You may find out that they have a diabetic senior parent who they have to go and give them their shot or their needle or whatever before they get to church. And by the time they do that and get to church, yep, they're a few minutes late. But there's a really good reason why. And so before you jump in with the negative criticism, ask a few questions. Make sure you've got the total picture. I remember hearing a story of a man, and he was on an airplane with two or three of his children. And these kids were just uncontrollable. They were running up and down the aisles. They were making all kinds of noise. And the father seemed to be in Lulu land. He was just sitting there with his hand on his chin and was not paying attention. And finally, somebody in the plane says, sir, get a hold of your kids. They're running up and down, making all kinds of noise. What's the matter with you? And the man kind of jolted, and he goes, oh, he said, I'm so sorry. He said, but their mom died this week in a car accident. She's in the plane underneath, her casket's in the bottom of the plane, and I was so distracted by thinking and planning the funeral. I am sorry, I have not taken care of my kids. Now, did that person who was very harsh, did he wish he would have asked a few questions before he lambasted the guy in front of the whole plane to maybe say, hey, I see you're having, you know, your kids are you're having trouble coping with them. Is there something I can help? Is there a book? Can I read to some of your children or whatever? Instead of jumping to conclusions. I've always found that it's a good idea to lead with positive questions, and as Proverbs 25:11 says, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. So when you say it at the right time and you know the whole story, your words can then be very effective. And then number five, double check your motives. Why are you expressing this negative criticism? Has your ego been hurt? Do you want to actually embarrass this other person? Is your motive retaliation or to advance your own status? Are you really truly concerned about the person, or are you taking some sort of fiendish delight in pointing out whatever it is they're doing wrong? You know, sometimes honesty can force you to cancel your plans. When you actually look at your heart and you think, you know what, I'm taking pleasure in doing this. And a good rule of thumb is if it's painful for you to criticize, you're probably on the right track. But if you're taking a little bit of delight, time to zip it. Number six, Share some positive compliments as well as the criticism. Be sure that you focus on what the person is doing right before you jump into what they're doing wrong. A perfect example of this in the Bible is the church in Ephesus in Revelation 2. When God was speaking, he said, "I know your deeds, your hard work, your perseverance. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked men, and you have endured many hardships for my name." Before he talked to him about what was wrong, he prefaced it with what the church in Ephesus was doing right. And then he proceeded to say, "But yes, you have forsaken your first love." So make sure you get a good mix of positive and negative criticism. Number 7, speak the truth in love. The first 6 rules are not enough. You could pray about it. You could go directly. You could go privately. You could lead with positive questions. You could even double check your motive. But when you express it, you express it in a loveless way or in a sarcastic tone of voice or harsh, it will be administered in a loveless and in a bruising, cruel manner. And so, as Ephesians 4:15 says, we need to speak the truth in exactly. Colossians 4:6 says, be gracious in your speech. I like what Howard Newton said, tact is the knack of making a point without making an enemy. And sometimes people make a point, but in the meantime, they've lost a friend. And so we want to make sure that we're giving it and speaking the truth in love. We want to attack the problem, not the person. Not name-calling. You're stupid. You're an idiot. What's the matter with you, kid? Or you're the worst husband. No, that's attacking the person. You need to attack what's wrong, the actual issue. No name-calling, demeaning words. Use lots of I statements. I feel uncomfortable. I need. I wish. I observed. Instead of, you never. You always. You should. You know, as soon as someone starts to come at you like that, what do you feel? You feel very attacked. So rather, express your feelings using lots of I statements. And of course, your tone of voice and your body language is very important. You've probably heard the saying many times, it's not what you say, it's exactly. Rule 8, be objective and specific. In other words, support your criticism with objective evidence. In other words, do your homework. Make sure if you're saying, you know, something to your mate or your children, make sure that you have proof that this has happened more than once, that you know what you're talking about. Oftentimes, to write it on paper. Be specific. Don't be vague. Sometimes people in the church would come, one individual would come to and say, you know, Pastor Simon, everybody in the church is mad at you. Simon would say, really? Everybody? Could you identify the everybody? And sometimes all it was her and her gossiping friend were the ones that was the everybody. Or maybe in the office setting, you're saying, everybody's upset with you, boss. Everybody's not happy with what's going on at work. Well, who's the everybody? And you need to be specific. What are they upset about? So be objective, be specific. Don't make these sweeping statements and have nothing to back it up with. And then rule 9. Earn the right to be heard. There really is only one way to earn respect, and that is a record of good behavior over a long period of time. And if this is your first week on the job, you're probably not a good candidate to be going in to the boss and giving him a long list of things that should be improved. Why? Because you haven't been with the company long enough to really know what's even happening. Or if you're a new member of the church, or you're a new member of some club that you're involved in, you need time to have a record of excellent behavior and a record of good deeds done in the past. And so ask yourself, what you have to say may be valid, but have I earned the right to speak into this situation yet? Have I earned the respect to be able to comment? And then rule 10, suggest alternatives. Accompany your criticism with remedial suggestions. To blame a person or criticize a person and not to give them some idea of how they can improve is really unfair. It takes creativity to come up with solutions. And you know, anybody can curse the darkness. And again, reflecting back on our pastoral days, sometimes people would come to us and say, this needs to change, and this needs to change, and I wish this was better. And often Simon would say, I totally agree with you. I see the need to improve this area. Now, what do you think we should do to improve it? What is your idea? What are your suggestions? And sometimes those same people who had a long list of criticisms had never given 5 minutes about how it can improve. And sometimes we'd say to them, they'd say, well, we need to improve this and change this in the sanctuary. And would you be willing to give a good donation in order to make that happen? Would you like to be on the committee to make that children's program happen? We agree with you. That needs to happen. But some of those same people who were very vocal with what was wrong, when we asked them to help be a part of the solution, oh, no, they were busy. They didn't have money. They didn't have time. They just had time to observe and criticize. But rather, we loved people who'd come and say, Pastor, I think this is an area we could improve. He'd say, thanks for thinking. We like thinking people in our congregation. And they'd say, and guess what? Here's a plan. Here's an idea. I want to do a fundraiser. I want to raise the funds for this so that we can improve or paint or whatever. And we were delighted when people would come, not only with the criticism, but with the promise that they were going to help make it better. You need to say things like this. Can I suggest this alternative? This is maybe what you could consider stop doing or start doing. And do you hear how the person who's criticized is going to take your criticism with so much more more readily, because you're on the construction crew, not just on the wrecking crew. You know some people that all they do is on the wrecking crew and criticizers? Yes, and I don't want to be that kind of person. I want to be a thinking person in the congregation or at work, the office, that when I go to the boss, I can say something needs to be improved, but I've got an idea. I've thought about it. All right, so our 10 rules for giving constructive criticism. Please stand. Let's review. I hope you're listening. Let's read them out loud together. Okay, 10 rules for receiving negative criticism. The first one I shared with you, number one was? Oh, you can let them cheat. You can put the next ones up. Number one, pray. Number two? Number three? Number four? Number five? Number six? Number seven? Number eight? Number nine? And number 10. Excellent. You're a good class. Be seated. Now I'm going to give you 10 rules for receiving negative criticism. And you know, again, having been in ministry for 30 years, sometimes the people that were the best at dishing it out, at giving it, were the worst at receiving it. Their favorite verse was, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And when they were confronted with criticism, oh, they weren't very good recipients, but they sure expected all the rest of us to be. And secure people can take a lot of criticism, especially if you're in leadership at work or even as a parent. You're a leader, so you're in a more visible position. It's easier to hit a target you can see, right? It's easier to hit the pastor or the leaders or the elders or your boss at work. Why? Because they're in a position of authority. And if you are in a position of leadership, you just have to suck it up and realize that that's part of your job. That anybody that is in leadership is going to receive criticism. So, rule one. Same as the rule one for giving criticism, pray. Ask the Lord to guide you in receiving the criticism. Say, Lord, help me to be sensitive to what needs to be heard. Help me to filter through what I need to let go. Help me to control my temper and my anger. First rule, pray. Number two, beware of becoming defensive. Now, we're all human. When somebody starts in to criticize, what is the first thing we want to do? Exactly. Put up walls, be defensive. But you know, sometimes that is very counterproductive. Ask yourself, do I have so much pride that I'm above criticism? That I think, like, how dare you criticize Ruth Clarence? That's sometimes how it comes across. So ask yourself, if I'm really getting angry or my temper is really just ready to blow, ask yourself, do I need to look at my own heart? Am I not human? Am I not capable of making mistakes? Well, the answer here is, yes, I am. How about you? Everybody here on the same boat? James 1:19 says, be slow to anger. Ecclesiastes 7:9 says, don't be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the laps of fools. Exactly. I like this Chinese proverb. It says, if you are patient in a moment of anger, you will escape 100 days of sorrow. And it's true. Sometimes what we say at the spur of the moment, oh boy, we're paying for that statement for a long time. And you know what? You can never take that back. I remember as a child, a Sunday school teacher did an object lesson. She brought in a dandelion and she went, and all the pieces of the dandelion were all over the place. And she said, gather up all those pieces of the dandelion. Well, it was impossible. It was all over the place. And she says, that's sometimes how it is with your words. It's once you say them, the effects are all over and you're paying for those negative words for a long time. Here's something that's really helped me. It's helped me with my kids and also when I was at the church and work. If somebody comes to me with a negative criticism, and particularly if it's not given in the best way, instead of me responding, this is what I say. Thank you for sharing that interesting comment. Now, interesting can mean anything. It may mean you are out to lunch, you are crazy, or it may mean this: you have shared something that I need to think about. But in that moment, instead of feeling that on the spot, I need to respond, because I found in the past, my first reaction is not always my best. How about you? Sometimes I need to think about it. Even with my kids, if they would come and criticize and say, thank you for sharing that interesting comment. Can I get back to you? And when I got back, say 24 hours later, after I'd had a chance to think about it, sometimes I would say, Lord, did you hear what Simon said to me yesterday? And he'd say, yeah, I heard it. And the only reason why you're mad is because the truth hurts. He's right. Ugh, that really wasn't what I wanted to hear, but I had had a chance to process it. Or sometimes when I would take it to the Lord in my devotions, the Lord would say, you know what? Simon said that, but he doesn't understand why you did that. There's a piece of the puzzle he doesn't know. So you need to, in grace, go back tomorrow and say, you know, I thought about your interesting comment, but can I explain to you why I said or did that? And sometimes when I did that, people, you know, Simon or whoever would say, oh, I didn't know that. But do you see that I avoided an angry confrontation right at the time? By just saying, can I get back to you? That has saved me a lot of grief. Because where is my emotional level at that point? At the heat of the moment, it was right up there. Not always a good time to open your mouth. But after you've a chance to process it by the next day, you can either go back to the person and say, you know what, I thought about what you said. And that was a very good point, and I have taken it under advisement, and I'm going to work on that. Thank you for showing me that blind spot. Does that sound like an angry confrontation? Nope. Or if it's something that maybe they need some clarification, you can, not in an angry moment, like you might have said the day before, what do you know about it? You're crazy. You're making assumptions, judgment. And it could have been a very nasty scene. Or rather, when your emotional level is down, you can say, you know, I need to share with you some information maybe you don't know that will be helpful in understanding why I did what I did. So beware of becoming defensive and use that little tip. That will really help you. If you feel at the moment you're going to lose control or you're going to say something that's potentially damaging, you may just need to excuse yourself. Excuse me, I just need to take a little break and just walk away. Now, what I didn't say was stomp your feet and slam the door on the way out. No. Say, hey, you know what? I need some time to process this and just get out of the situation. Sometimes you need to just gather yourself, politely excuse yourself until you've had a chance to perhaps return to the meeting or whatever. Rule 3, let the critic finish. Don't interrupt. Have you ever given a criticism to someone and you just start to say it and before you can hardly finish the first few sentences, what are they saying? Oh, but what about you? You always do that. Who are you to criticize? Like, they're right defensively reverse it back on you. So is that criticism going to be helpful to you? No, because you're so busy defending yourself and trying to make yourself look good that you're going to miss possibly something that would be helpful. So we used to do this when we were pastoring. If someone came to us, we'd say, now, is there anything else on your heart? Is there anything else you want to share? Because, you know, you'd rather get it all at one blow than to think, okay, that was round 2, but I know round 2 and round 3 and round 4 is coming. So ask them, is there anything else that you'd like to say? Again, James 1:19 says, be quick to listen. 1 Peter 5:5 said, God sets himself against the proud, but he shows favor to the humble. So if you're humble enough to ask, is there anything else you'd like to say? I often refer to this object lesson. God gave us a very clear picture of the ratio that we should be doing to talking to listening. He gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth. That should say something, right? Listen twice as much as we talk. Then rule 4, ask for evidence upon which the criticism is based. So if someone comes to you and criticizes, you can say, now what would bring you to that conclusion? What would make you think along those lines? And sometimes when they share that, you think, oh, I would have thought the same thing. You know, I didn't make it clear. That was a very normal assumption you would have made. Or sometimes when they say, well, this is how I came to the conclusion, you can say, oh, goodness, you didn't know the whole story. And so right away you can clarify it before it gets into be a big issue. And so if their evidence is adequate, you can thank them and say, yes, you're absolutely right. I failed to do that, or I should have done that better. I'm going to work on that. But if you find if it's inadequate, if it's maybe based on hearsay or they haven't got the full, you can say, I need to correct or I need to clarify. I need to give you some more information. Make sure that when the person criticizes you, you reflect back and you say to them, now, do I hear you saying, am I clear on what you're criticizing? And sometimes if you say, oh, no, that's not what I really meant. Oh, okay. Then take another stab at it. How can you rephrase your words so I will clearly know what's on your heart? Rule 5, ask questions of yourself and let the criticism be a source of learning. Ask yourself this, Lord, what do you want me to learn through this criticism? You knew this was going to happen. This is no surprise to the Lord. So sometimes the Lord said, yeah, I've been actually trying to talk to you about this for a while, Ruth. You weren't listening. So I sent Sister So-and-so to talk to you about this matter. So ask questions of yourself. Thank them for their insights. And don't spend all your time justifying, rationalizing, excusing yourself. Say, okay, I need to listen to what was being said and learn from it. I remember hearing John Maxwell talk. He's one of my favorite authors. And he said, critics are my best friends. And when he first said that, I thought, really? At the time, I wasn't thinking critics were my best friend. He said, oh, no. He says, I love critics. Even if they're not, if they do it maybe in a loveless way, but even still, I still listen to them. Because you know what? Often they will point out something that I never thought about. And he says, and every time I get a criticism, my presentation gets better. And you know, Simon and I, we do a marriage seminars as well. And we always give out an evaluation form. Because we get feedback from people and sometimes they will give us, that's a great idea. We never thought of that. Or we could add this to our seminar that we hadn't added before. So critics are our best friends. They help us improve. And if you change your mindset from, oh, this person's just being mean and criticizing and nasty, to, Lord, what are you using this person to tweak? We all should be in a mode of, How can we do life better? How can we be a better parent, a better employee, a better student, etc.? Proverbs 1:10 clearly says, listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you will be wise. Also, Proverbs talks about iron sharpens iron. Sometimes the Lord uses other people in our lives to do just that. So after the conversation, you want to get a piece of paper and write down, or you can maybe even do it while the conversation is happening, what are the main points? Have I made sure I have heard what you are saying? So that you don't get home and you magnify and you add all kinds of stuff. Write it down so you can process it and analyze it. And ask yourself, now, what parts of the criticism here are helpful? And filter out the important points. Proverbs 28:13 says, a friend who refuses to admit his mistakes can never be successful. And Proverbs 27:6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Rule 6. Determine whether the critic has needs revealed by the criticism. Ask yourself, what is this person really saying? Ask the Lord for discernment, to look between the lines. Is this person maybe viciously criticizing you because they're really crying out for help? Are they insecure? Are they jealous? Are they threatened by you? I remember one of the first, in the first years of our pastoring in Devon, there was a lady who came to me and she said, Ruth, I think you're a show-off, and I think you're very proud, and I think you're always wearing new clothes and trying to impress us all at church. I said, really? And she said, yes, every week almost you have a different skirt or a different dress on. And she says, I find that very showy. Well, I thanked her for her interesting comment. And then when I talked to Simon, I said, you know what? I need to echo back to her and explain. Prior to coming to Devon, I used to be the CE director at Central Tabernacle. And in those days, you had to wear a skirt to work every day. So 6 days a week, I was in skirts. I had quite a few skirts and tops. And I had worked there for 7 years. So girls, you know, you buy two or three new outfits every season. So she did not realize that I did have quite a few skirts and dresses. But some of them were 7 or 8 years old that I was recycling from the back of my closet. But because I was in a new church, it seemed like I was showing off. Now, and as I discussed it with my husband, I said to Simon, is this comment really about dresses or what's the need? And when I got to know her better, what was the need? She didn't love herself. She felt insecure. She felt not good about herself. So she was lashing out at me because it was a self-esteem issue. And so instead of going back and saying, the nerve of you to criticize me, those were all old clothes, and you don't know what you're talking about, woman, which I could have done, rather to say, you know, can I explain where this wardrobe actually has come from? You know, that I had a lot of clothes over the last 7 years. And once I explained that to her, it seemed to soften her approach to me. But more importantly, it created a sensitivity in me to say, hey, you know what? Compliment her every chance you get. Compliment her on her clothes. She's obviously feeling that she's inferior. And so, Lord, you're going to use me to help build her up. But do you see how sometimes we need to look beneath the surface? And when our child comes home and is so cranky and lambasting us and we're the worst parent, and you think, whoa, where did that come from? Well, you might not know that he's being bullied at school. And there's all kinds of tension that you don't know about. And so we need to determine if there's needs that are being expressed. Rule 7, externalize the criticism. In other words, don't take every criticism personally. And make the conclusion, this person hates me. They don't like me. I'm inferior. No, you can listen to their words, but keep them out here. Don't always take it personally as an attack on your self-esteem. And rule 8, there is some criticism you just need to ignore. You need to consider the source. Last month, I was doing a study on the book of Nehemiah with Chuck Swindoll. And I thought, there's a perfect example of exactly this point. You remember Nehemiah was rebuilding the wall. And Sanballat and Tobiah, some of the other leaders, were constantly criticizing him and trying to discourage him. And this verse said, "Then Sanballat sent his servant to me as before, the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand. And in it, Sanballat said to Nehemiah, 'It is reported among the nations and Geshem, saying that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you're rebuilding the wall because you want to become king.'" Now, what was that, folks? It is reported, and therefore, according to the rumors? What does that sound like? Assumptions, incorrect assumptions. And what did Nehemiah respond? He said, "Then I sent a letter back to him saying, 'No such thing as you are saying are being done, but you invent them in your heart because you're trying to make us afraid and discourage us.'" So Nehemiah knew, you know, there's some criticism. You need to get it in one ear and out the other. You consider the source. And that, like I say, is a perfect example. Is this person important to you? Do you value their opinion? Are they chronic naysayers and always negative people? Do they like to shoot off their mouth and make themselves feel important? So sometimes you need to consider the person who's delivering it. Proverbs 26:4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his own folly, lest you become like him." Rule 9, follow up with positive action. After accepting criticism graciously and your emotions have settled down, take responsibility. If they've pointed out something you need to apologize for, apologize. Make it right. Write down a measurable plan that you can say, "This person brought something to my attention, and here's how I'm going to address it. Here's how I'm going to improve." If your boss complains you're always leaving tasks to the last minute to get your reports in, then set your due dates for the report a couple days ahead. Make a plan so you're not going to be always running against the clock. If your husband complains you talk too much, you may need to shut down the flow a little bit, girls. If your wife criticizes you spend too much money, men, you may have to stick to the budget that she's posted on the fridge. If your child complains that you don't have enough time for them, then maybe you need to reassess your schedule. So make a plan. Don't just listen to the criticism and walk away. Say, "How is that going to make me a better parent, boss, whatever?" And rule 10, adjust your attitude. You can do all of this, but then still be depressed. But instead of, you know, the pity party and poor me and I've been attacked again, rather look at a criticism as a chance to grow. I am going to be a better person as a result of this. Now, it's easier said than done, and sometimes it is easy to hold a grudge or harbor anger, but at the end of the day, where does that get you? Exactly. It not only is there an area you need to improve, but now you've added to your woes anger and bitterness and unforgiveness. So, I mean, that's plain stupid. Let's not do that. Proverbs 15 says, "He who listens to life-giving reproof will be among the wise and will acquire understanding." I like what Proverbs 9 says, "Reprove a wise man and he'll love you. Give instruction to a wise man and he'll be still wiser. Teach a righteous man and he will increase in learning." And don't you and I want to be that kind of person, that we're open to criticism so that we can tweak, that we can live our best life, that we're constantly growing, that we're not stuck being the same people that we were last year or last month? So, please stand. Let's review. Giving you 10 rules for receiving criticism. Number 1, pray. Number 2, beware of becoming defensive. Number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, number 7, number 8, number 9, and number 10. Now, I am going to give you a secret tip so that you will never receive criticism again. Anybody interested in that? You're all in? All right, here's my secret key. Number one, do nothing. Number two, say nothing. And number three, be nothing. And if you do those three things regularly, you will never be criticized again. But guess what? It's not possible. We're going to live, and so we're going to be and do and say, and so from time to time, we are going to have criticism. And you know, as you see, this was more of a teaching sermon, which I am so glad the Bible is so practical. Aren't you? Sometimes I go to church, and after the sermon, and I think, now how does that work, Lord, on Monday morning? Like, I don't know how I'm going to really make that work on Monday to Friday. But you know what? This sermon works Monday to Friday, doesn't it? And you know what? I'm going to pray that the Lord is going to give you opportunities this week, that you're going to get more criticism than usual, and you're going to get out that pink sheet, and you're going to say, now, what did Ruth tell us to do again? And so when you get extra criticism this week, you just blame it on me, because I'm going to pray that you're going to practice. You can hear, probably from my format, I'm a school teacher. So I like to review, I like to give points, and I like to give homework. So guess what? Your homework this week is, am I going to give criticism? I'm going to be very mindful of these points. Put them up on your fridge. And if I receive criticism this week from my boss, from my kids, from somebody at church, I'm going to put these principles into practice. What does the Bible say? We cannot only be hearers of the word, but... And I am so glad the Bible is practical. It's a how-to book. It just doesn't tell us be kind, be people of integrity. It tells us how to. And so this particular topic that I talked about, it affects all of us, and the Bible tells us how to deal with it. So, in conclusion, just like this match, criticism can be something that's very constructive and be very helpful, but it also can be very destructive and cause immeasurable harm. Or, just like this knife, if it's used in the wrong place, at the wrong time, with the wrong motives, it can be very hurtful. But it also can be very helpful to cut out the cancer or to take out the impurity, to help us to be better and to improve. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for your word and the fact that it is so practical. And as I said, a how-to book. You've given us tools that we can put in our toolbox that will make us better employers, better parents, better parishioners, and better leaders. And so, Lord, I pray today, this week, that these fine people will have many opportunities to put into practice what they've heard today. Thank you for this church. I pray a blessing on them. I pray a blessing on the new pastor that's coming in. And I pray that each parishioner will remember these points as they are dealing with their new imperfect but wonderful pastor that's coming in. And may they realize the power of life and death that is in their tongue. And may they use it regularly to build him up and to support him and to take this church to the new level. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you again. You were a fine class. You were taking good notes. Have a good week. God bless you.
Refreshments just in the foyer if you guys want to grab a quick snack before you go home and to fellowship a little bit, okay? Have a blessed week, everybody.
I've added a lot of stuff.
That was interesting.
Well, thank you.